I've been working in the field of HIV for over 15 years, and there's been a lot of progress made, and I'm very excited to be part of the hard work that's taking place in Zimbabwe to reach the global 90-90-90 target.
When you say there's a lot of progress being made in Zimbabwe, it seems as though the numbers are going up in terms of HIV prevalence rates. Zimbabwe was, of course, spotlighted as one of the countries that had achieved a very significant decline in HIV prevalence rates back in the early 2000s. By 2013, it was starting to come down around 13%, 12%, but now more and more we hear it's around 15%, maybe even going up to 16%.
No, I think the numbers do change depending on which data sources you're using. Overall, there's a decline in HIV prevalence in Zimbabwe. We do see slight increases in some groups, which is not a trend that's unique to Zimbabwe, and it does urgently need to be addressed. For example, in young women, we sometimes see this trend across the region. At the UN General Assembly meeting last week, PEPFAR announced their investment of nearly $500 million globally to support an AIDS-free future for adolescent girls and young women. And I'm very glad that Zimbabwe is one of the countries which PEPFAR identified as needing additional support specifically for youth, and included us in the DREAMS initiative.
Now, you're being in Zimbabwe as the CDC director. What do you see your role is in terms of its impact in trying to steer more resources towards curbing the spread of HIV/AIDS overall in the country?
So I'm replacing a long line of CDC country directors in Zimbabwe, and my position does not directly impact our funding levels, which are decided at the global level. But my role as director will be to provide guidance and oversight to CDC scientists and to our implementing partners as they carry out their efforts in support of the overall CDC and PEPFAR goals, and to document that an impact is being made and that CDC is part of the PEPFAR team in Zimbabwe, then reports all of our progress back to the Office of the Global AIDS Coordinator, which is the PEPFAR headquarters. And then by demonstrating that PEPFAR funding and efforts in Zimbabwe are both cost-efficient and high-impact, we then help make it clear that investing in HIV services and health systems in Zimbabwe is a very powerful and effective way to address the global HIV epidemic.
Zimbabwe has always taken on the prevention tactic, and they've really stressed in terms of information how to prevent HIV. Do you think that has been effective, and is that part of the progress that you would attribute to Zimbabwe's success, or at least partial success in fighting HIV?
Yes, I think Zimbabwe is renowned for the efforts and the progress that they've made so far, specifically in the voluntary medical male circumcision program. They've made some tremendous strides there and do continue to make strides and plan to in the coming years. So I think Zimbabwe, their efforts in prevention is definitely achieving some ends. The new WHO guidelines, which promote test and start for everybody identified as HIV positive, will also contribute towards increasing gains in the epidemic.
Mm-hmm. Where would you place Zimbabwe in the 90-90-90 goals and strategies that the CDC and the global health community is pushing for?
Well, Zimbabwe does an incredible amount of testing every year, which is very encouraging. And we do know that there's about 50% coverage of ART in people living with HIV at the moment. But in order to meet the 90-90-90 targets, all of the countries in the region are going to have to think of new strategies and new approaches. You know, you can't keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. So meeting even the first 90, where 90% of people living with HIV know their status, is going to take a great deal of effort to accomplish. So this is a really good example of how data can be used for decision-making. Where testing is not routinely provided in health facilities, we have numerous data sources to draw from. We can identify the challenges that are faced in facilities and areas within the country, and we can then support programmatic or systems changes that are needed in order to improve or increase the testing coverage.
Speaking about data, how accurate is it, at least in terms of determining the levels of HIV prevalence in the country, and how is it measured?
Yes, the data, as I said, there's multiple sources. There's the routinely collected data by the Ministry of Health that's gathered from the facilities, which reports the number of people tested, the number of people starting treatment, already on treatment, staying in treatment. And then all of this is supplemented with periodic surveillance and surveys, such as the newly launched ZIMFIA, which is the Zimbabwe Population HIV Impact Assessment. So this survey is designed in response to the UNAIDS 90-90-90 initiative. It's actually a pilot HIV impact assessment. This is the first of 20 that are planned. globally, and it will measure progress towards 1990 at the population level with more precision. And then these results will be used as a baseline to track progress towards 1990, while also providing additional insight specifically around each of the steps in the cascade of care. Mm-hmm. And then we would plan to use that information to inform our program and policies.
There was a time when people really feared being affected by HIV and AIDS. And then there was complacency once access to medications became more and more available. Do you have any concerns around how HIV is still prioritized at this point in time, given the access to treatment?
Well, you know, complacency, as you described it, it definitely has the potential to reverse the gains that we've made to date. It's partly because of the remarkable progress that's been made that there sometimes is a perception that, you know, both locally and internationally, that the challenge of HIV has been solved. But it can only be underscored that there's absolutely no room for complacency when HIV still causes over 100 deaths a day just in Zimbabwe. You know, you can contrast that to any daily number of deaths in the recent West African Ebola epidemic, and it makes it very real. You can see the very real urgency to keep pressing on towards epidemic control for HIV. You know, all of us are responsible to ensure that complacency doesn't become a problem. The people who are on ART are responsible for taking their medicines every day to prevent resistance and a viral rebound. The health workers are responsible for ensuring that testing and treatment are consistently available. You know, governments and implementing partners are responsible for ensuring that health workers can and do implement their national guidelines at a high standard of quality. So while we do have a strategy both globally and in Zimbabwe that can take us to epidemic control, much of the hard lift of identifying the HIV-positive individuals, enrolling them on treatment, and ensuring that they remain dutiful to their treatment regimens is still before us. Mm-hmm. You know, most countries have the next 5 years to repeat what has taken us 10 years so far. As I said, Zimbabwe's got about 50% coverage of treatment in people living with HIV, and we want to saturate the nation by 2020 for epidemic control by 2030. So that's a big lift still to go.
And in light of these new group of diseases, the NCDs, non-communicable diseases, which are being equally highlighted as problem areas, some even say they kill more than HIV. When you talk about diabetes, high blood pressure, cancer, even, do you see a war of competition for funding in terms of trying to maintain the high priority on HIV levels, but at the same time also the other diseases that are also now seemingly a big threat?
Yeah, so, you know, there are and have always been other significant health needs in Zimbabwe and around the world in addition to HIV. And non-communicable diseases or NCDs such as hypertension, heart disease, diabetes, these are on the rise around the world. And with limited resources, as public health leaders and policymakers, we have to make decisions about how best to maximize the investment of funds for the range of health needs that we face globally. I think the reality is that it's important to see this less as competition for funding and rather as a need to build alliances in the care of treatment of HIV treatment and NCDs. It's also important to acknowledge that some NCDs may be more prevalent in people living with HIV, and because of this, the integration of NCD identification and treatment as part of the bigger HIV care package is really important. Mm-hmm. I do think we're seeing a corresponding shift in HIV care guidelines to include this, which is reflective of the greater emphasis on the use of data for decision making. And the more people we put on treatment and the longer we monitor their care, the more we'll be dealing with issues such as lipid abnormalities and diabetes. So our efforts to strengthen the health system through activities like clinical mentoring, supporting the government with updating guidelines and training curricula, improving the patient tracking, all of these things will ensure in the long term that Zimbabwe can sustain its response to HIV as well as to other health challenges.
Mm-hmm. Just touching back a little bit on the group you mentioned that was vulnerable, the youth group, you know, that a couple of years ago, one of the themes of, I believe it was World AIDS Day, was achieving an HIV-free generation. You know, you've been an advocate of this, of bringing down this pandemic for so many years. Do you think that is achievable? Is that something you can say you are looking forward to announcing one day soon?
Yes, I do. I do think it's achievable. And actually, really, it's just been in the last year that I have come to realize there is actually a light at the end of this tunnel. It doesn't mean that there's not an incredible amount of work ahead of us. And there are resource gaps, both in terms of funding and human resources and infrastructure and in many other areas. But I do believe it's possible to contain this epidemic, yes.
Why I also ask that is because we've been reporting a lot lately about these sex parties that are taking place in a lot of cities and towns in Zimbabwe among youth, and apparently very risky behavior and almost completely oblivious of the impact of such activity, you know, sexually. You're talking about people having group sex without protection. What do you make of activities like that among the youth as you're pushing for this generation to be free of this pandemic and this disease?
So I do think it's a little risky to trust too deeply in anecdotal evidence. I think anecdotal information is not as reliable as the information that will emerge, say, for example, from the Zimfia study that's launching now. And I think if there are activities that are ongoing like that, it will come out when in some of the surveys that are underway. We have trained the data collectors, the survey implementers, to be very sensitive and careful in how they work with people to gain information. So I think that will, first of all, provide more details as to the scope of such a problem if it exists. I think that it's important to ensure that our young people of today do have a lot of information and do understand the risks associated with high-risk behavior, what the consequences are. Unfortunately, it's sometimes a challenge for anywhere in the world for young people to fully understand the consequences of their behavior.
And my last question is to do with stigma, which has also been labeled as one of the biggest obstacles towards achieving a real breakthrough in HIV/AIDS. So what is your take on the impact of stigma?
Well, you know, it's been observed that increasing access to ART in a country will reduce the stigma in that country at the same time. When you make treatment widely accessible, you minimize a lot of the more obvious signs of HIV that people were familiar with, like in the 80s and 90s. And we've seen across the region that as ART access is decentralized and as PMTCT option B+ is scaled up, we've seen that more and more. But we also know that stigma can negatively affect somebody's adherence to ART, in other words, their ability to take their drugs every single day as prescribed. And this is especially the case when someone perceives or anticipates stigma within their own household. But usually this comes hand in hand with people, members in the household, not knowing the HIV status of that person. And I think this within family stigma is probably the single biggest threat to both starting and keeping people on ART. People, if they can't trust their family members with their HIV status, they'll be scared to keep their pill bottles, their health cards at home with fear that somebody might find them. Mm-hmm. And I think the new WHO guidelines for immediate treatment definitely has the potential to reduce stigma in society even more than we've seen already. Mm-hmm. So in order to reach the 1999-90 targets, I think it's important that stigma continue to be addressed and to continue the emphasis that we must be open and accepting of all people HIV so that they feel safe to learn their status, go for testing, to seek care and treatment, and to remain consistent in their use of ARVs.
And would you also consider it a breakthrough in terms of eliminating the stigma when you hear people say, yeah, I am HIV positive or I have AIDS, the same way somebody would easily say, I suffer from high blood pressure, yes, I have diabetes, or I'm struggling with cancer?
Yes, I do. I do think it makes it far more, when you see very normal, healthy people acknowledging their HIV status and living with a very positive mindset, it does reduce that fear of HIV quite a bit.